Welcome back to the Social Gambler Radio Hour. I'm John Arnett. 794-9001 is the number if you'd like to get in here, talk some sports today. 794-9001. We are brought to you by thesocialgambler.com, your leader for free sports picks, news, and reviews. Just got finished with an outstanding 15-minute interview with Padraig Harrington. Fascinating stuff about his opinions on the game of golf, about spilling whiskey from the claret jug in the back of a San Francisco cab. We got him going. We even started talking about Tennis Hall of Famer's Yvonne Lindell affinity for full body cavity searches. I know Lindell a little bit. I've played a little golf with him, so I probably will not be hearing from his lawyer, just so you know. But really appreciate Harrington spending some time with us. And if you missed it, or if you missed any of it, we are going to be re-airing it in its entirety at the end of the show. Now, of course, golf's not all that's going on in the sports world. As a matter of fact, it's not the biggest story of the day. The biggest story of today is a quarterback, more specifically, the greatest quarterback that I have personally seen with my eyes, being released from his team and put on the market, available for the highest bidder. Now, before people go crazy about me saying Peyton Manning's best quarterback I've seen, let me make a few things clear. I've never been a Peyton Manning fan. I rooted against him in college. I was happy when Spurrier and Werfel put it to him every year. I've rooted against him throughout his entire professional career as he's tortured the Jags. Can't tell you how many. I guarantee you, if I have seen Peyton Manning play 100 games in his career, I have been rooting against him in 80 to 85 of those games. So I am no Peyton Manning lover, bandwagon, Peyton Manning fan, or whatever you want to call me. And I've seen John Elway, I've seen Joe Montana, I've seen Dan Marino, I've seen Tom Brady. And I've never seen any quarterback who has been good, as consistently as Peyton Manning. And moreover, this is not a situation like we've seen even with Brett Favre, even with Montana when he left for the Chiefs, where those guys were already starting to decline, or they had shown signs of decline. Manning, even though he missed this past season, he was last seen on the field, still at his peak. Still one of the best players, if not the best player in the National Football League. And I firmly believe that the 2-14 Colts, if Peyton Manning had played, it would have been same old, 11-5, 12-4, win the division. He is that much of a difference maker. I do not believe that the team around him eroded at all. He played with bad defenses up there his entire career. The offensive personnel was the same up there that it was last year. And they were a good offense last year. Of course, when I talk last year, I guess I'm really talking the year before last. Last year, of course, he didn't play. The last time Manning played, they had the same offensive personnel carry over to the last season without Manning, 2-14. So I've made no secret on this show that I believe that Jim Irsay has badly, badly mishandled this situation. Today they had the press conference announcing that Manning was released. Both Irsay and Manning were in tears at times. Manning said he'll always be a Colt, thanked the fans. Jim Irsay had a few things to say that I thought were interesting. A couple of them were just laughable. I would say laughable more than interesting. And that would be when he got to the part about how he's just letting Manning go because he wants him to have success at the end of his career. Irsay said, quote, "Here we don't have everything to surround him. I want him to succeed at the end of his career." So in other words, what he's saying is, oh, out of the goodness of my heart, I wanted to put Peyton in a place where he could succeed and flourish. Sure, sure. Anybody buy that one? Anybody buy that this is just Jim Irsay being nice to Peyton Manning? That's why we're letting Peyton Manning go. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the $28 million they would owe him on Thursday. We're going to go to the phones now. We got Dan from Baltimore on the line. Dan, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, how's it going, John? I caught a little bit of what you were saying. I don't know what y'all, I guess the main topic's been Peyton.
Well, actually, we had, for 15 minutes in the last segment, we had a great interview with Padraig Harrington. If you missed that, if you missed that, Dan, we're re-airing it in the next segment before the end of the show. So if you're interested in golf, Padraig Harrington really gave us an interesting 15 minutes. But go ahead.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Speaking of Padraig, what did he say about, did he ever say why he was, after he won his three majors, why he changed the
It's funny you say that, Dan, because you're not the only person who told me to ask him that. I had a couple people say, ask him why he won a couple of majors in 1 year and then changed his swing. I didn't take that, I didn't ask him that specifically.
That's a tough question.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not Mike Wallace here. I wasn't trying to make him sweat. But he did give us some very interesting insight on his career. Said it wasn't until after the U.S. Open in 06 when he really felt when he really believed he could win a major. He gave us some interesting insight about how he felt the average golfer has it completely wrong about what golf actually is, and he thinks everyone should go back to the basics of the sports they learned to play and basically simplify everything as far as their golf game. Really some great stuff. Also talked about spilling whiskey out of the claret jug in the back of a San Francisco cab. So if you didn't catch that interview, I highly recommend, like I said, we'll re-air it in the next segment. It's good stuff.
Okay, yeah, I'll check that out. Well, real quick,
sure.
I know Peyton's the main topic.
Sure.
What is your take on this? You know, obviously with Tiger's 62, even though he didn't try to go for that pin on 18, but, you know, he shot a 62, and everyone is up in arms that he's clearly going to be in contention with Rory still and even Westwood. Who would you say, you know, $1 million for the right answer, if you had to say, who would you put on Vegas to win the old Augusta there? And I'll hang up and listen to you, John.
All right, well, thanks for the call, Dan. I do appreciate it. Well, let me tell you what. After that call I just had with Harrington, and by the way, I looked up the odds before I talked to him. 66-1 is the odds on Harrington winning the Masters. And I don't know if you heard it, Dan. I know you didn't, but I know some listeners did. I asked him what the state of his game now was. He was very clear. Said he's never played better. Said he has never played better, never been playing better, never felt better about his game. He was as clear about that as you could be. And so after hearing that, at 66-1, if I have money to bet on the Masters, I might think seriously about backing Padraig Harrington. Now, I do think that Rory McIlroy is the best player in the world right now. I thought it was very interesting that Padraig Harrington, when I asked him who he thought was the best player in the world, he mentioned McIlroy. And then he said, tee to green, it was Lee Westwood. And also, when he talked about Tiger Woods and Tiger's greatness, I don't know if you caught it, he used the word was. Tiger was so great. Tiger was a great putter. He was talking in the past tense about Tiger Woods' greatness. I'm sure some of you caught that. Interesting stuff. So, Dan, to answer your question, I mean, tough to bet against Rory McIlroy right now. I do not think just because Tiger played a great final round on Sunday that he's all of a sudden the best player in the world again. I do think Tiger is still one of the best 15 to 20 players in the world. I think he always has been throughout the last couple of years. But, you know, it's hard to make an argument that Tiger's the best player in the world right now, in my opinion. Rory McIlroy looks pretty good to me, but I tell you what, it's 66-1. Harrington looks even better. Got Dave on the line now. Dave, you're on the Social Gambler Radio Hour. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Boy, it's a great interview with Padraig Harrington. You know, great friend. Enjoyed listening to it.
Yeah, it was interesting stuff.
Interesting observations. I thought it was pretty cool that, you know, he felt like he belonged after a loss. First of all, you know, I would assume that, you know, you would feel like you belong playing with the top players in the world after some kind of big win, but it was really the loss in the 2006 U.S. Open that made him feel like he belonged there. Secondly, you know, it was interesting to me, and I'd not heard this, you know, about how he was brought up.
Hello? Do we lose him?
Hey.
Dave, are you still with us?
Are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you now. We lost you a little bit, Dave. We lost you. I heard you say you thought it was interesting how he was brought up, and then I lost you.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting how he was brought up, his game in Ireland, how he was nurtured kind of from stage to stage. And I'm just curious on your thoughts. Is, you know, I don't think the USGA does that here in the United States, and maybe that could be one of the reasons why we've kind of struggled in the Ryder Cup over the last maybe 10, 15 years or so.
You know, maybe so, Dave. I thought that was fascinating, too. I mean, what he really said was, he said here in the U.S., you know, if you're the best at, say, 15 or 16, and then you slip, you know, you might sort of fall through the cracks or get lost. when he was saying in Ireland, since it's a smaller pond, he was saying kids were allowed to struggle for a time or maybe lose their confidence and then get it back and still be sort of recognized as a nationally good player. And you're right, that's just fascinating. And, you know, young kids, when you're talking about 16, 17, 18-year-old kids, you know, they're not fully developed emotionally. And so maybe you're right. Maybe that's exactly what some of these kids need. Some of these kids who get burned out and who are great when they're 16, but by the time they're 20, they don't even want to touch a golf club. Maybe, you know, if the culture of junior golf in this country was a little more sort of compassionate or understanding or how it seemed to be in Ireland, according to Harrington, yeah, but, you know, maybe we'd see a lot more good young American players. It's a good point.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was fascinating as well, too, and it seems like, you know, especially over the last 10 or 15 years, you know, you're seeing kind of the emergence of the European golfers and you know, as some of these older U.S. here, but I just think the, you know, the preponderance of the good young U.S. players is a lot lower given the size pool we have in the United States versus Europe. So, you know, it scares me as a United States fan going into future Ryder Cups and that, you know, all these good young players seem to be coming from other areas outside of the United States, and you know what's the future of golf going to look like in 20 years? You know, when Tiger Woods is playing on the senior tour, and Phil Mickelson is playing on the senior tour, and those guys are gone. So,
I agree with you, Dave. I agree with you. You make some good points, and hey, I appreciate the call. That's a good call. Thanks for listening. Do have to go to a quick break now. Now, on the other side, if you did not hear it, we are going to re-air the interview that we did with Patrick Harrington in the last segment. I know there's a lot of Peyton Manning talk to get to today, but that was just fascinating stuff. A fascinating 15 minutes, I thought, of radio, hearing Patrick Harrington's perspective on golf and life in general. So that'll be right back on the other side of the break here on the Social Gambler Radio Hour.
Extra Flex total lease payments with 1,500 cash or trade equity down. Includes tax, title, and fees. 39 off lease, 12,000 miles.
Welcome back to the Social Gambler Radio Hour. I'm John Arnett. We are brought to you by thesocialgambler.com, your leader for free sports picks, news, and reviews. Social Gambler has plenty of stuff up there for tonight, some NBA stuff, some World Golf Championship stuff. Don't forget Doral's this weekend. Also, some Champions League soccer, for those of you interested in European soccer. Everything on the Social Gambler is completely free, and they are an app for your smartphone, so be sure to check them out, The Social Gambler. Now, if you want to bet on any of the things that the Social Gambler gives you advice on, there's only one place to do so here in Northeast Florida, and that is at the Jacks Are Better Casino, the casino ship that sails 9 times a week, Wednesday through Sunday out of Mayport. Now, St. Augustine residents, we've told you there is a free shuttle every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning at 9:15 that leaves the Ramada on 95 and 16, brings you to the Jacks Are Better in time for the 11 o'clock cruise, brings you back to your car by about 5 or 5:30. Completely free. You do have to call and make reservations. 372-4220 are those reservations numbers. When you make reservations, be sure to mention this radio show, the Social Gambler Radio Hour, for $10 free play. That's $10. Can be used same as cash anywhere in the casino. So if you're going to go check out the Jacks Are Better, which I highly recommend, mention this radio show. They'll give you $10 free play you can use anywhere. Now, hey, I know you'd all love to hear me talk about Peyton Manning. That's sarcasm, by the way. And believe me, we'll talk plenty about him tomorrow and the next day and the day after that. But for those of us who did not hear it, maybe you just got in your car, just getting off work, did not hear our interview with Patrick Harrington from the first segment, some great stuff. Really appreciate him sort of opening up to us, giving us some life stories, really some lessons. We're about to re-air it right now. This is Patrick Harrington on the Social Gambler Radio Hour about 25 minutes ago. Yes, sir, we are joined by three-time major champion, one of the greatest golfers in the world over the last decade. Of course, I'm talking about Patrick Harrington. Patrick, I really appreciate you giving us a couple of minutes here. It's John Arnett from the Social Gambler Radio Hour.
Yeah, no problem at all. I'm down here in Windsor Golf Club doing a bit of practice, and as it happens, there's a shower outside of rain, so you've got it in perfect timing for me.
All right, great. Well, hey, we got you all day. We'll take some calls then. Now, tell us about your schedule coming up here in the month leading up to the Masters. We know you're off this week. Are you playing over the next couple of weeks?
I'm going to play Tampa next week in transitions. It's a golf course. I actually missed the cut there last year, but I really like the golf course. I think the course suits me, so I'm looking forward to getting down there next week. I then take a week off, go back to Ireland, and I come back then for the Shell Houston Open and then the Masters and Hilton Head after that.
And the Houston Open is the week before the Masters, that's correct?
Yeah, I always play the week before a major. Just, I find if you take a week off and you start practicing, you get a lot, you get into your game a bit too much. Well, if you're on the golf course, you can sort of sort out where the little faults are. Maybe your chipping isn't quite as good as you wanted, or your putting. So, you know, you're better off being competitive the week before a major tournament, so that during the week of the major, you actually do nothing whatsoever.
That's very interesting. We're talking with Padraig Harrington now, three-time major champion. Now, let me ask you that. Since you talked about that, I was going to sort of get to it here in a second. Let me ask you a question about golf in general. You know, seems to me golf is unique in that a lot of people will play for 10, 20, or 30 years and never really improve. Yet they all seem to have ideas about what's wrong with their golf swing. You know, frequently if you ask someone like this what they're thinking about during a swing, they'll rattle off a list of four or five different things. My question is, do you think the game of golf is taught properly by professionals around the world?
Let's put it this way. The game is very, very, very much so misunderstood by people. People left to their own devices tend to get it completely wrong. And yes, sometimes teaching can also lead people down the wrong path. I do believe for the majority of people to enjoy the game, they should go back to whatever sports they played as a kid and think, what are the movements I made to swing a baseball bat? And if you want to create power in any sport, whether it's throwing, swinging a baseball bat, or golf, you have to create it the same way. You've got to have a turn, a pivot, and then you turn back and you hit it. And if you do those same things, yes, you won't always hit the ball straight, but nobody always hits the ball straight. But you'll have speed, you'll have a dynamic motion in your swing, and you'll hit plenty of good shots to bring you back to the golf course the next day.
That is great stuff. Now, you've had a really nice start to this season yourself. You made all three of your cuts on the PGA Tour. You've also had a couple of nice results abroad. Of course, the top 10 out there in Pebble. How do you feel like the state of your game is right now, you know, heading into sort of an important stretch?
My game is, it's never been better. It's just waiting to happen. I'm getting a bit frustrated at times. I'm not putting as well as I have put it in the past, but fundamentally there's nothing wrong with my putting. As I said, I'm swinging the club really well, I'm hitting the ball really well, so I'm just waiting for it all to happen. It's tough to wait with patience, and it's tough to stay confident, you know, when the results aren't happening, but it's all there together. It really is just a question of a turning around 1 week on the golf course. And you know, the game of golf, it's like a lot of sports, it swings and roundabouts. You have spells where you're not on your peak form, and then when it does happen, it happens easily. It all comes at once. It's like buses, they all come at once. You know, you kind of have to be patient, and, you know, when you get a win, all of a sudden you get another win on the back of it, and that sort of things become easy. You know, putts that you might have missed last week, all of a sudden you're holding those 8-footer for par, and, you know, you're moving on and making birdies. It's a strange game that way. You just have to be very patient, do the right things when it's not working out for you, and then when it does go for you, just run with it.
That's great stuff. Again, we're with Padraig Harrington, three-time major champion. Now, let me ask you, Padraig, Ireland is not an extremely large country, certainly. Yet between yourself, Rory McIlroy, Graham McDowell, Darren Clark, that is six majors in the last 5 years. Now, I know that the other three of those guys are from Northern Ireland. First, let me ask you, out of curiosity, do you consider those guys your countrymen? Or is it more...
Very much so in golf.
Uh-huh.
You know, the game of golf is actually run by an all-Ireland body, which includes Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. It's so we grew up playing on the same teams, representing the Golfing Union of Ireland, you know, in European championships around the Europe, and as I said, playing in, against England, Scotland and Wales. So as we would have been teammates growing up. So yes, for golf, we're all one, which is nice. It's only in golf and rugby and maybe one or two other sports, but certainly in golf, it's just one team.
Now, do you have any explanation? I mean, do you just think it's a fluke, or do you think it has something to do with the way Irish golfers are brought up playing the game, why you guys have had so much success here over the last few years?
Well, there are a number of good things that happen in Ireland. We're a very small pond, so any player, you know, who gets into the system can be nurtured. You know, if you're a good player when you're 15, you're brought into the different coaching panels. But if you don't play so well when you're 16, it's not like you're going to be dropped. You're still in the system. Whereas if you're a you know, I'm sure if you're a good kid in Florida, 15 years of age, yes, you might become under the radar. But if you slip a little when you're 16, you'd be dropped that quickly because there'd be another 16-year-old to take your place. So in
sure.
Ireland, you are definitely nurtured. You're definitely still in the system. And another good thing about that is, you know, certainly I was the number one amateur, you know, when I was, say, 18 to 24 years of age, but I didn't play well every year. But the years I didn't play well, I still had to maintain my position. I still had to go around there and win matches, find a way of doing it. So you learn how to play without your A game. You learn how to, just because it's a smaller pond. It's not, if you're in a big pond, every day you're going out there, you're trying to absolutely be at your very best, because if you're not at your very best, you don't win. Whereas in Ireland, being good can be good enough to win at times. So you learn that, you know, stay in there on the bad days, stay patient, keep it going. So the smaller pond is definitely helps. Plus, I think in Ireland, we're very competitive. As in, right from the age of 14 years of age, I could play, once I made it to the Irish pond, I could play in any golf club in the country for free. So I could go and play against, we used to arrange matches, my club against, like, as kids we'd arrange the match, no adults involved, we'd just say, right, we're coming over for the weekend, we're going to play two matches on the weekend, we'd stay in their house, we'd bring them back. So there'd be a lot of that sort of inter-club rivalry, inter-club tournaments, there'd be individual opens in every golf course, and you can just keep moving up the grades. You go from your local clubs to your county, and then you move up to your what we call it a province, be like your state here, and then, you know, you move into the international scene. It's just, there's a good learning path, and its conditions aren't perfect for playing golf. We don't produce, it's not ideal for producing guys who swing the golf club well because it tends to be windy, but it's ideal for producing guys who know how to get the golf ball in the hole.
And that might go back to what you talked about earlier in terms of maybe people being a little mixed up as far as their idea of what golf is in terms of golf or golf swing. Now let me ask you, I know in 1996 you won the Spanish Open, but really about 10, 12 years ago is when you sort of broke through as one of the best players in the world. Is there a time in your early career that you can remember it sort of sunk in that not only do I belong, but I can be one of the very best out here?
Oh, you know, I would have had different spells where I would have made a step forward, let's say. Winning in 96 was a big thing for me, to win in the European Tour. I won't say I felt like I belonged at that stage, but it was definitely a help to that. Making the Ryder Cup in 99 was a big stepping stone for me. Then I was winning a bit, then sort of 2002. Coming over here, winning in 2005 was big. Believe it or not, I lost the US Open in Winged Foot in 2006. I had four pars to win that one, the one that Jeff Ogilvie won. Mm-hmm. And everybody remembers that one because Monty had the 7-iron into the last green,
yes.
And Phil Mickelson doubled the last. So no, I went right under the radar, but I had four pars to win that tournament. And that was the first time I walked away from a major knowing I could win a major, because everything I'd done up to those four holes was completely within me. I'd done nothing spectacular for the week. It wasn't, you know, fluky or lucky. I hadn't been holing putts. I played well within myself. Okay, I messed up coming to the end. I actually overpressed in the last four holes. It was a big learning experience. When I bogeyed the 15th hole, I thought I needed to make birdies. And as it turned out, I was only one shot off. You know, two pars or three pars in the last three holes would have got me into the playoff. So it was one of those occasions you learn. But I did walk away from it knowing that I was good enough to win a major. So that was one of the pivotal points in my career.
That's very interesting. Again, we're with Padraig Harrington, three-time major champion. Now, Padraig, if you don't mind, I'm going to read you a couple of quick questions here that were submitted by listeners. Steve
okay.
C. wants to know, what's the craziest thing you did with the claret jug? I know you had it in your possession for a couple of years.
Oh, you know, all I say to you is, when you're drinking out of the claret jug, okay, you will always, or maybe I'm a bit strange, as you're drinking, you're just thinking, where has this trophy been before and what has been in it? So you do take a drink out of it, but you're quite happy to let everybody else drink out of it.
Yes.
So crazy thing, I tell you what, the funniest story was, I have a good bunch of friends in San Francisco, so I took it out there and we were, you know, in the Irish pubs and things, and I was coming home one night in a taxi, and the guy driving the taxi was wearing a golf glove as he was driving. So obviously we knew he's a bit
sure.
into golf or a bit little bit odd
out there, sure.
And he started talking about Golf in the Kingdom and, you know, getting into his golf books and things like that. And mm-hmm. we were winding him up, and he had no idea the open claret jug. I was actually worried because the claret jug was actually spilling whiskey out through the box. The guys hadn't emptied it in the thing, and I was kind of making a mess of his taxi, and I was trying to get out there, but I actually kind of regret not opening it up and showing him what was in the back seat, because it would have been a story for the rest
of you never
of his
showed
life.
Him.
I never showed him. Because I was spilling whiskey in his seat. I was just trying to get out of there.
Oh, man. You know, the next morning he cussed these guys all. He's drunk spilling whiskey in my seat.
Yeah.
Little did he know.
Yeah, well, he's probably heard the story back at this stage.
Yeah, I bet he has. That's good stuff. Now, David wants to know, who is the best putter you've ever seen?
You know what? There's no doubt Tiger Woods was the best putter consistently for 10 years. And, you know, as good a player as he was, the putting was the number one reason why he dominated the way he did.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen players put as well as him for periods of time. There's no doubt Luke Donald put it like that last year. He put it beautifully for the whole year, hardly ever three-putter really, and just holed out beautiful. I've seen other players for maybe a year, 15 months where they can put lights out. But Tiger, for that 10-year period, was just unquestionable. He never missed like from 4 or 5 feet. He held all the 10-footers. He held lots of long putts. You know, you couldn't have asked to put any better than he did for probably the longest period. Obviously you could go to people like Lauren Roberts and Ben Crenshaw,
sure,
are great putters over time. But, you know, in my era, I certainly would be picking Tiger.
Yeah, sure, he sure didn't seem to miss any. Last question we got here from Danny. In your opinion, removing yourself from the equation, who is the best player in the world as we sit here today?
Oh, you know, in a great game at the moment. I do believe Rory is the best player in the world at the moment. And I think there's a great number of players challenging. There's certainly 4 or 5 players with Tiger back in the mix. You know, you've obviously got Phil. The great thing with Phil is if he plays well, he's the best player in the world. That's the great thing about Phil. You know, okay, he mightn't hit his best form all the time. He mightn't have the same consistency, but he's capable of turning up and winning any given week. Tiger's back in form. Martin Keimer is a beautiful player. Martin's probably a little bit taking a little bit, like a lot of guys who win a major tournament, it just puts a little bit more expectation, puts a little bit more pressure on
mm-hmm.
you, and it takes a little bit of time to deal with that, but he's a beautiful player. Obviously, Lee Westwood is nearly the complete article. Like, tee to green, Lee is probably as good as there is in the game. Lee Westwood is probably tee to green the best in the game, actually. If you add up his driving and iron play, it's pretty special. But I would still give it to Rory. He's got everything going at the moment, and he's got the little bit of momentum, which, you know, you've got to have that confidence that, you know, it's nice to be young and fearless.
Yes, I bet it is. Well, Padraig, we really appreciate all your time here. Now, before you go, we do have to ask you, before the rain, were you about to play golf? I heard through the grapevine, were you supposed to play golf with Tennis Hall of Famer Yvonne Lindell this afternoon?
That's right. We're going out to play 9 holes, and we've got an interesting match. It's actually Ladies' Day here, so we're actually going to play off the Ladies' Day.
Oh, I know Yvonne loves Ladies' Day.
Well, I'm not too sure of his thinking, but I think we've better chance. I hope he's not listening to this, of giving Yvonne a few shots and playing him off the Ladies' Tees than maybe playing him off the members' tees or the back tees, which he's used to playing here.
Yeah, you may be right. Now, I do have a bit of advice for when you're playing with Yvonne. Cover your eyes and watch your ankles when he's about to hit a pitch shot, because it is one of the more unnatural things that you will see in terms of golf.
And also, you
have to ask him, and I will break this story now, did you know for a fact he was detained as a terrorist within the last month trying to get back into this country?
I think he actually, within the last week, but he was actually trying to leave.
Oh, was he trying to leave? Because
he was trying to get into Canada with his passport, only had 5 months, and they detained him for 3-4 hours, something like that.
Well, when
he said to the customs guy, he says, you know, why would I want to go into Canada? We have 2 hockey teams better than you down in Florida.
I believe that he said that. And, you know, from what I heard, and you have to ask him if this is true, confirm this, I heard he was waiting around in hopes of the full body cavity search I heard that his wife Samantha ended up pulling him away crying before they were able to give him the search.
You know what? I haven't asked him, and I won't be asking him for those details.
Well, hey, Padraig, we really appreciate your time here. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us. I really can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
No problem at all, John. Thank you.
Welcome back. That was Padraig Harrington. Interesting stuff. How long we got, Pete?
Your exclusive home for ESPN Radio and Mike and Mike in the Morning. 1420 WAOC St. Augustine.
ESPN Radio Sports Center.
Hour. It was emotional as Colts owner Jim Irsay and his franchise quarterback the last 14 years, Peyton Manning, stood side by side in Indianapolis and announced their amicable divorce. Manning read a prepared statement and, like Irsay earlier, nearly lost it a few times but held it together. Didn't discuss where he might play now, but did say he's healthy enough to return after missing last season.